Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, co-hosting today's program with Melody Cederstrom, who will be joining us in a couple of moments. For all your gold and silver needs, call us at toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, Melody and I will be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. Hello, Melody. Hello, world. Happy National Smile Day today. It's also National Speak and Complete Sentences Day, if you can believe that. No, I'm not kidding. As such, I promise to speak to you with a big, wide smile and in complete sentences on today's program. I'm sure Melody will do the same. Hey, let's get started with today's market report. an interesting day in the precious metal market. Gold, which was as high as 1857, is down about 19 bucks. 1% at 1836. Silver, which was as high as 22.08, is down little over 2% at 21.58. Platinum, excuse me, up 10 bucks at $976. And palladium down 2% at $2,090. Let's see what else is going on in the commodities market. Oil up about a quarter of a percent to $115 and change right now. Natural gas down almost 6% today at $8.22. Let's see. We've got the U.S. dollar index up, looks like 9 basis points at 101.76. And that usually means we've got increasing yields in the treasuries. 10-year yield 2.857 up. We got the 5-year 2.82, then the 30-year 3.061, all up today. And in the stock markets, weird day, roller coaster for sure. Dow Jones right now down 224 plus points at 32,990. We got the broader S&P 500 down 26. At 4132, and the NASDAQ, which had been up a good part of the day, down just about 50 points at 12,081. It's been a while since we've seen that number. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's market report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Now, until Melody gets back, let me talk to you a little bit about today's headline news. Home prices up another 21%. Now, rising mortgage rates apparently didn't slow down rising home prices in March. Nationally, home prices were about 21% higher in April than they were a month earlier. It's according to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. That's higher than the 20% gain in February. The index is a three-month running average, this one ending in March. Now, the average rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage stood at about, just shy of 3.3% at the start of January and ended March 42% higher at 4.67, according to Mortgage News Daily. And, of course, it's well into the fives. As we speak, the Case-Shiller 10-city composite rose 19.5% in March, up 80 basis points from February, while the 20-city composite saw a 21% year-over-year gain. That's up slightly more, 90 basis points from February. For both national and 20-city composites, March's reading was the highest year-over-year price change in more than 35 years of data. Regionally, Phoenix slipped from the top gainer spot for the first time in 3 years, with Tampa, Florida taking over. Tampa, Phoenix, and Miami continued to see the highest annual gains, with increases of 34.8%, 32.4%, and 32.0%, respectively. 17 of the 20 cities reported higher price increases in the year ended in March 2022 versus a year earlier. Now, cities in the top 20 index seeing the smallest price gains, albeit still in double digits from a year ago, were Minneapolis, up 12.4%, Washington, D.C., up 12.9%, and Chicago, up 13%. Demand is still high. Real estate agents reporting they are still seeing multiple offers for homes that are at least priced correctly or competitively. Mortgages are quickly becoming more expensive as the Fed has begun to ratchet up interest rates, suggesting that the macroeconomic environment may not support extraordinary home price growth for much longer. It's a little bit of potential good news for buyers.
I'm back.
Hey!
Hey!
Melody Cederstrom, everybody. We were just finished talking about housing and mortgage rates, and we're just getting ready to mention this Biden-Powell meeting this afternoon.
Yeah, I want to thank the listeners for joining us, and there was just a couple of calls, and Nashley comes in right at the top of the hour. So you went over the market prices and everything, Dave?
Sure did.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. And you're right about, Biden and Powell are going to be meeting. Hopefully they're not mating, but meeting to weigh the possible measures to control rising inflation. And so they're going to talk about global economies. It's like, well, okay, just discuss the state of the U.S. You know, I think we should be focused on the United States and worry about our problems first, because then we might be able to help other economies. But let's focus on ours first. And that discussion shouldn't be in those meetings. But we've seen one of the main tools used by the Fed to judge inflation, of course, is the PCE index. And that has increased by a little over 6% over the 12 months that was ending last month, April. And it was down a little bit, but nothing, historic or anything. It's March was 6.6. But, that thing's everybody makes inflation has peaked. It's like, really? And so they're thinking in April it peaked. So we'll see what May has to say, Dave. Hello, Dave. Did I lose you now?
Nope, I am here. My bad.
You bad? Yeah, did you hit the mute?
Hey, I'll never tell. Well, we know a key driver of inflation has been the cost of energy, which, of course, includes gas prices. We'll be talking a little bit more about that and Russia's invasion of Ukraine and how that's affecting European action and numbers. Former President Trump first nominated Powell to head the Fed in 2017, despite the disapproval from certain senators like Bernie Sanders of Vermont, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Biden decided to renominate him for a second term. And that came on the heels of a very controversial trading scandal at the Dallas Fed, which resulted in the Fed changing its rules for its members. It's all about inflation right now, although I suspect Biden will be or already has said to Powell, you know, let's not hammer the job market as we bring inflation under control, Melody.
Well, the only way that you're not going to is, you know, he's not going to be able to raise rates anymore. That's what he's saying. And it's like, well, you know, you have to. But then, you know, again, we've said this time and time again, the Fed is between a rock and a hard place. He's darned if he does and darned if he doesn't. And it's all due to their own creation of their problem. They've created their own problem. And now they don't know how to, you know, to address the problems, the additional problems that they've created. So, and inflation is here to stay. It's not going away. You know, you can believe their paltry little 2% targeted, you know, rate that they'd like to have. And in fact, this, the Fed governor, Christopher Wallace, what he says that he sees rate increases continuing through the rest of the year. He said he'd like to support hikes that exceed the neutral level. Considered neither supportive nor restricted for growth. Estimates the Fed officials provided in March point to 2.5 neutral level. But you know, it's all gobbledygook talk. You know, the problem is we still have inflation. Do you really believe? And it's not going to be a turnaround quick type of a situation. And then what are you going to have in the meantime? This isn't the way it was under Summers. Wasn't it Summers? Back in the 70s, Dave?
Larry, well, yeah, I mean, you got a slew of them. Summers, Bernanke came later.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of Summers. Yeah, I mean, Summers didn't have these problems. We might have had problems, but not these problems. So it was a little easier for him to raise those rates to make a, you know, to try to make an impact in inflation. But today is a whole different beast. And we do have a beast with the amount of debt, both government, both consumer and personal. And so whole different ball game, But, you know, so, yeah, the minutes from the FOMC officials believe a restrictive stance of policy may well become appropriate depending on the evolving economic outlook and the risk to the outlook. So, you know, you start seeing the paper markets being dumped. Yeah, they're not going to raise rates. They're still going to be accommodative. They're just not saying it. And so they're going to have to choose Wall Street or you for inflation. Right, Dave?
Well, remember this. Since the Fed's creation, nearly 100, well, in the 20th century, the value of the dollar has fallen by almost 99%.
Yeah. Yep.
That means your purchasing power has fallen by 99% of what it had been over those years. So, as Melody said, that's a sign that inflation is always here. Of course, from a consumer's standpoint, as well as business, you know, to the extent they're real numbers, getting inflation down to a more manageable level is certainly a worthy goal. Some might call it a pipe dream, but...
If the dollar has already lost 99%, their fight against inflation is just a dog and pony show because they can't do it. It's not going to drop from 99% that your purchasing power down to 50%. I mean, things aren't that. It's not going to go in that reverse.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens in the coming months. But also remember, there are currently 2 job openings, roughly, for every available worker, according to the BLS. And that's making some Fed governors optimistic that, you know, they have much more room to move with rate hikes before the labor market goes haywire. I'm not so sure about that, but...
You know, I'm not either. And I mean, when you think about the last time, you know, that Powell was raising rates under Trump, I mean, they were, if we do a comparison on the economy and everything, hey, we just came out when there was how many lockdowns in this country where business couldn't work. They don't have the funds to pay for these higher rates when they're going in there and buying business equipment and so forth and applying. Because all these businesses, well, not all of them, but a majority of them are debt-driven. They're debt-run. They need their loans to run their businesses. They need debt to run their businesses. But this time it's different because they don't have quite the savings or the, you know, that they've had before. So with these rates going up, I mean, yeah, it's going to have a big impact. And I don't think they're going to be able to raise them as much as they did under Trump. But we'll see. As you said, we saw consumer confidence that dropped. Now this is, there's different types of various consumer confidence reports out there. This is the Conference Board's monthly survey that was released today, showing that the consumer confidence dipped 2 points to 106.4 in May. Now you might think that is still a strong reading. However, it was 108.6 in April. So that's a big drop, in a month. And, the business research group's present situation index, and that one measures consumers' assessment of current business and labor conditions, that also fell to 149 from 152. So the expectations index, based on consumer 6-month outlook for income, business, labor market conditions, that too declined about 2 points in April. And again, for the same reasons, inflation and low wages, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, consumers were slightly less optimistic about the labor market, even as employers have added around 400,000 jobs in each of the last 12 straight months. Excuse me. Purchasing intentions for big ticket items like cars, homes, major appliances, they all cooled somewhat. And rising costs remain the top concern for consumers. So Lynn Franklin, who's the Conference Board's head of economic indicators, said that looking ahead, expect surging prices and additional interest rate hikes to pose continued downside risk to consumer spending.
And there's that notice. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog that David produces, and they're always very, very good. And, you know, there's two things we're going to touch on. There's, you know, more people that are writing about gold going to 3,000. According to Lombardi's letter, Mo Zolfagar, he said the central banks could be one of the biggest catalysts to take the prices to that level, 3,000. You know, we know that central banks have been buying gold for years. They'll never stop because they get it. If they were going to stop, they wouldn't own any at all. But why do they own it? Why do they continue to own it? You know, if it's the barbaric metal that everybody thinks it is, why did central banks keep it? But it's not you know, and some of these major central banks, maybe they're not the ones that are buying gold lately. Maybe it's the smaller ones, since we already know most of the big ones already own a lot of gold. And, of course, a lot of your central banks, they don't make an announcement before buying their gold reserves. They buy it first, and then they announce it later. And lately, their actions have been speaking louder than words, saying they want more. And they've been net buyers of gold since 2010. So in the first quarter of 2022, they bought gold again, 84 tons of it. And this is all from the World Gold Council. Now, that's a little bit lower than the amount that was used the same period a year ago, but they're still buyers. Egypt's central bank purchased 44 tons of gold in the first quarter. Now they have 125 tons in reserve. Turkey bought 37 tons, and they have 430 tons in reserves. So over the past few quarters, India's central bank, they've also been active. India added 6 tons of gold to its reserves in the first quarter, bringing it to 760. So those are kind of some big numbers, Dave.
Numbers for a big population, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And you got little old Ecuador bought 3 tons from small local gold producers in the first quarter. The Bank of Ghana announced a gold purchase program last June, with the goal of increasing its reserves from 9 to 17 tons by 2026. Ghana's central bank says it's purchased 600 kilograms of gold under that program so far. And then, interestingly, the Central Bank of Russia announced that it will resume gold buying. In the past few years, Russia's central bank has been one of the most, well, resilient, I guess we can say, central banks in terms of purchasing gold. It bought gold regardless of price, up or down. The Russian bank currently holds about 2,300 estimated tons of gold. Now, central banks need gold as the world becomes more polarized and fiat currencies become more competitive and devalued. Gold has a history of preserving wealth in times of currency devaluation and crisis, and central banks know this well. They hold a lot of currency in their reserves as well, and will need a lot more to hedge against future volatility. And that, Zolfagar says, will help gold prices get to $3,000 per ounce sooner than later, Melody.
And again, we know Mr. Duffy from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, how many years ago? 5, 4, 5, 6 years ago, said gold should trade $5,000 and $6,000 at that point in time. So, you know, $3,000 is nice, but if it was, and this is the head of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the head guy. So, you know, I think he knows something about commodities. And he certainly knows something about gold. So, yes, gold is way underpriced. And, Dave, I just want to go off here on 90% silver. You know, I got some calls. And people were looking for dimes. It says, well, you know, what are you getting dimes for? And these are smaller quantities. If one looking for a full bag, there's no problem getting dimes and so forth. Well, it's easier to deal with. It's dimes. I don't have to. Does anybody understand that if, you know, we're going to be using dimes to purchase things and so forth, that inflation is going to be much higher, and the product and the things that you're going to be buying is going to be much higher. So you'll probably end up giving 2 to 3 dimes instead of 1. So 2 or 3 dimes is equal to a quarter. So, no. Yeah, you get the quarters. And I know some people push those mercury dimes, and there's a little bit more premium in them. And maybe people who are pushing the dimes is the only thing that they can get. And there's times to buy dimes when the premiums are separated and, you know, it's the only thing there that you can buy. And dimes are great. But, you know, the argument that you're going to need a smaller currency, it doesn't work. Not with inflation. So a quarter is just as good as a dime. And there's a lot of other things floating around out there. You know, there's more and more gold and silver people advertising. And, you know, I think the next biggest thing is when you're going to sell it. Even the 90%, people are being told there's nobody that's going to buy it. And that's just, it's just ridiculous. It's just lies. Like, who wouldn't buy it? You're selling it into the market. The trade, commodities are going to trade. And they're not going to, they can stop for a short period of time, but you still have a value on it. Through 9/11, gold market was the first thing to come back over the paper markets. They whacked off 2 hours of trading on it. Because, yeah, so, I mean, there was reasons for that. So, no, if the market shuts down, that's one thing. But, I mean, you're always going to sell your items, your gold. Gold trades 24/7. If I work 24/7, I could buy your gold at any time. So, and sell it into the market. So, for these people, and even the $20 gold pieces, that's what they say about the $20 gold pieces. Oh, nobody's going to want your $20 gold pieces. Are you kidding me? Those are the things that are going to be going up the most in a fear-driven market. So in a fear-driven market, their premiums are going to jump the most. And what do people buy when they're buying investments? The things that go on up the most. It's human nature. And there's only a limited supply of them. So the supply gets very tight, and it pushes the premiums up too. And people will understand the value of a $20 gold piece with the performance and the profit and the protection built into those coins over gold bullion coins. But because people don't want to sell them because they'd rather just focus on gold eagles and silver eagles, oh, what a bad investment. Nobody will want those coins. They're rare. No, they're not rare. If you buy the right ones, they're not. They fall into the category of rare coins, of collectible coins, but you don't have to take it to an auction to sell them. And again, you sell them into the market. So, again, I listen to what these other dealers say, and it's just they're promoting an agenda that they have. So just be very careful when you hear these things. And, you know, I had a lady, here's another, it's not really about gold and silver. She was talking to her financial planner, and she was opening up a precious metals gold IRA. That's what she wanted. That's what she got. And she called her financial planner to get her funds out of there. And he says, I don't know why you're doing that. Do you realize you're going to have to pay fees for storage every year? And she got real concerned about those fees for storage. I says, well, let me ask you a question. How much do they charge you to manage your money? What's the fee for that every time they make a trade for you? I'll guarantee you it's triple to what those storage fees would be. You know, but that's one way to scare people and to make people change their minds. So just be very careful. Give me a call at 1-800-375-4188. And, you know, just heading into the break, we have information, an article here about how the EU is agreeing to impose partial oil embargo. I'm kind of... Moscow has pledged to find other importers for its oil. Shortly after the world's largest trading bloc agreed to impose a partial embargo on Russian crude. So yesterday, the EU decided to ban most Russian oil imports by the end of the year. All things can happen by the end of the year. And they're punishing Russia. Now, my question, though, is, well, anyway, it covers Russian oil brought into the bloc by sea, with an exception carved out for imports delivered by pipeline following opposition from Hungary. So the EU's long-delayed sixth package of sanctions against Russia required approval from all 27 member states, but has yet to be formally ratified. Responding to the measures, Russia's permanent representative to international organizations in Vienna said the oil ban reflects negatively on the bloc. And my question is, you know, if it hasn't been ratified yet, I can only imagine what they're going to have to pay for their energy. And then what are they going to do? Because I think, you know, or are the energy prices going to drop, Dave?
Our energy price is going to drop. Not right away, I'll tell you that. Even if they end up getting them from, say, U.S. and Canada, you can be sure that our producers are going to mark them up. You know, just sort of economics 101. The demand, especially an emergency demand, I think is going to result in higher the price is certainly in the short run. And then, of course, if the embargo is long-term by the European blocs, even if, you know, Hungary continues, Viktor Orban continues kissing the butt of Putin, that'll change the equation, certainly for Russia, for Putin, and his government's bank accounts, if you will. But again, it's not going to, I don't believe, happen anytime soon. And I think these measures in the shorter run, I mean, I guess we'll know as we get into the next winter heating season, I think are going to be pretty gosh darn painful for European citizens.
Yeah, but you know what? It seems like, you know, they're just pushing us closer and closer to a nuclear war, and it doesn't seem like they really care about stopping that. And that's you know, I'd rather, you know, I don't, anyway, that's another topic, but yeah. I don't think Ukraine is, you know, I don't want to say it's not worth a nuclear war, but us getting involved is not worth a nuclear war, and Europe too. But because they're having their own problems with inflation in Europe, 8.1%. So, you know, they have the same problem. Annual inflation in the 19 countries that use the euro currency soared past the previous record of 7.4% in both March and April. It's now at its highest level since record keeping for the euro when it began 25 years ago. Soaring prices that are weighing on household finances, just like here, making it more urgent for the officials to try to head off further increases in the cost of living. Their energy prices jumped 39%. Well, get ready for more. So international Brent crude rose to $120 a barrel after this agreement of the embargo. So, you know, these countries really don't care about the people who live there. You know, they can pay 40% more in energy costs. Can't they, Dave?
Huh. Well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. I think that's a good place to end that particular topic.
All righty. Will do. Credit union and banking trade groups, they've released a joint letter to the chair and ranking member of the House Financial Service Committee warning of devastating consequences.
Dun, dun, dun.
If the Fed moves toward forward with a central bank digital currency. You know, I talk to so many people about the Fed moving towards a digital currency. Now, this was a letter that was sent last week before the committee convened on the benefits and risks of the central bank digital currency. That hearing took testimony from only one witness. That was Brainard, the vice chair of the Fed. Credit unions, which frequently serve unionized labor, joined with the banking trade groups in signing off on the letter, lends credibility to the devastating consequences the letter enumerates of a CBDC. And again, that is the central bank digital currency. So, but it would allow the Fed to compete for deposits with credit unions and banks. Oh, that's a good thing, isn't it? Oh, my God. That would be devastating. According to Pam and Russ Martins in today's Wall Street on Parade newsletter, the letter correctly assesses the downside of such a move as follows. Private money is created through financial intermediation by banks and credit unions, which is the process in which financial institutions take deposits and lend out and invest those deposits. Private money is used by financial institutions to provide funding for businesses and consumers. That supports economic growth. And the CBDC would be a deliberate decision to shift some volume of private money to public. And those devastating consequences for the cost and availability of credit for both the consumers and a business. So, you know, in sum, that the savings of businesses and consumers would no longer fund the assets of the bank, which are mainly loans, which we should, I mean, the whole system is in trouble, Dave.
Yeah, and not that it should have waited this long to, you know, look for the demise of this digital currency. I think this letter, despite Brainard's testimony, I think this letter could spell the end of it, at least right away, Melody.
Well, I always said it wouldn't happen until we already have a correction in our markets and policy and monetary policy. But we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients this final segment. You reach her at 1-800-375-4188. All right, world news dominates this final segment today. Israel and the United Arab Emirates today penned a multi-billion-dollar free trade agreement, the latest product of the two countries' historic normalization deal in 2020, known as the Abraham Accords. With a stated target of increasing annual bilateral trade to more than $10 billion over the next 5 years, the trade agreement is the largest ever between Israel and any Arab country. It covers 96% of the trade between the two Middle Eastern countries, which last year reached $885 million, according to Israel's economic minister. The deal illustrates the sheer speed and scope of trade between the UAE and Israel that's taken place since the two established official relations in August of 2020. The $885 million figure is more than twice the volume of Israel's trade with Egypt last year, which was $330 million. And Israel and Egypt have had a peace agreement in place since 1979. Israel's Minister of Economy and Industry, Orna Barbavai, and her counterpart, UAE Minister of Economy Abdullah bin Tuk al-Mari, signed the deal in Dubai following months of negotiations. The signing opens a new chapter in the history of the Middle East, according to Emirati Trade Minister Tani al-Zaoudi, who added, "Our agreement will accelerate growth, create jobs, and lead to a new era of peace, stability, and prosperity across the region." Now, John Medved, who heads the crowdfunding platform Our Crowd, and happens to be a big venture capitalist in Israel's tech scene, said trust, mutual trust between the two countries is key to seeing more investment. Yesterday, thousands of Israeli nationalists surrounded the Al-Aqsa compound in Jerusalem, the third holiest site in Islam. They chanted anti-Muslim slurs, with some physically attacking Palestinians and a few arrested for spraying a Palestinian journalist with tear gas. The demonstrators had gathered for the commemoration of Israel's capture of Jerusalem's old city in the Six-Day War of 1967. UAE condemned what it described as the storming of Al-Aqsa and asked that Israeli authorities take responsibility for reducing escalation and ending all attacks. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett also condemned extremist behavior and vowed that anyone involved would be arrested. The growing economic relationship between Israel and the UAE, of course, a Muslim country officially supportive of Palestinian statehood, has so far remained largely untouched by the country's political differences over the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Interesting story there, ladies and gentlemen. Now, in other international news, analysts are saying the Chinese government is facing a growing shortfall of cash, and they're predicting an increase of debt. We'll have to fill that gap. The latest wave of Omicron and the widespread lockdowns in place since mid-March have resulted in a sharp contraction in government revenue, including land sales revenue. That's according to Ting Lu, who's the chief China economist at Nomura Bank. They estimate a funding gap of about 6 trillion yuan, roughly 2.5 trillion yuan in decreased revenue due to tax refunds and weaker economic production, and another 3.5 trillion yuan of lost land sales revenue. That 6 trillion, by the way, is equivalent to about 895 billion U.S. dollars. Now, the Nomura analyst said much of the incoming stimulus measures, be it special government bonds or incremental lending by policy banks, will be merely used to fill this funding gap. It's that $3.5 trillion yuan they expect will be hard to fill. And they listed several measures, from using fiscal deposits to increase borrowing, that could be used to make up the shortfall. Economic data for April showed weakening growth as COVID controls took a toll there. Premier Li Keqiang said last week that in some respects, the difficulties were actually greater than in 2020. Even before the latest COVID outbreak there, land sales, which is a significant source of local government revenue in China, have plunged following Beijing's crackdown on real estate developers' high reliance on debt. Local governments are also responsible for implementing tax cuts and refunds that Beijing has announced to support growth. Now, Nomura analysts didn't share specific figures on how much additional debt might be needed, but they pointed to growing pressure on growth that would require more support from debt. Excluding tax cuts and refunds, the Ministry of Finance said local fiscal revenue grew by 5.4% during the first 4 months of the year from a year ago. Eight of China's 31 province-level regions saw a drop in fiscal revenue during that time, according to the ministry. Shuai Zhang, president and chief economist of Pinpoint Asset Management, said, "It's important to notice that the decline of fiscal revenue happened not only in cities under lockdown. Many cities without outbreaks have also suffered as their economies are linked to those currently under lockdown. Many cities without outbreaks also suffered as their economies are linked as well. Since March of this year, mainland China has sought to control its worst virus outbreak in 2 years with new stay-at-home orders and travel restrictions in parts of the country, notably the heavy populated Shanghai region. This other tech hub of Shenzhen released figures showing a 44% year-on-year drop in fiscal revenue last month. Now, that followed a 7% year-over-year decline in March. Zhang noted land sales are down sharply as well. I think the central government may have to revise the fiscal budget and issue more debt to help local governments. Now, when asked in May whether that would be expanded, the Ministry of Finance noted some funding for next year would be transferred ahead of time to help local governments with tax refunds and cuts this year. Hey, we having fun yet? Well, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois today reiterated America's support for Taiwan on her second visit this year alone to the self-governing island claimed by the bad people in China. Duckworth, meeting with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen, emphasized the close economic, political, and security relationships between Taipei and Washington. China, you may have heard, sent 30 military aircraft toward the island yesterday in an ongoing campaign of regular military flights. Taiwan's defense ministry said it responded by scrambling jets, putting air defense missile systems on alert, and issuing radio warnings to the Chinese pilots. Senator Duckworth said she wanted to emphasize our support for Taiwan's security. I do want to say that it is more than just about military. It's also about the economy, the senator reportedly told Tsai. The former Army helicopter pilot and lieutenant colonel in the National Guard, Senator Duckworth, that has cited strong bipartisan backing for a bill she's put forward promoting cooperation between Taiwan's armed forces and the National Guard. For her part, Tsai thanked the U.S. government and Congress for the importance they place on peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait, as well as Duckworth for keeping a close watch on Taiwan-related security issues. Now, predictably, China said it strongly deplores Duckworth's visit. Its foreign ministry spokesperson, Zhao Lijian, said Taiwan is a province of China and there is no so-called president. He urged the U.S. to end all official contacts with Taiwan. The U.S. government has recently sent a series of erroneous signals on the Taiwan issue. He said, what the U.S. government should do is put into practice President Biden's remarks that the U.S. does not seek a new Cold War with China, does not aim to change China's system, and does not support Taiwan independence. Of course, President Biden said on a recent trip to Japan and South Korea that the U.S. would intervene militarily if China were to invade Taiwan. Russia's invasion has put China's threats against Taiwan under new focus, prompting increased backing for arms sales and political support from both sides of the aisle in Washington. And China upped the ante further earlier this month, reaching out to the Solomon Islands and nine other island nations with a major security proposal. Impact of that is, even if it's only partially realized, that agreement could give China a presence in the Pacific much closer to Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand, and on the doorstep of the strategic American territory of Guam. That's seen as a potential route to blocking access to Taiwan by the U.S. and its allies in the event China ever makes good on its threat to invade the island. Last Thursday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. aims to lead the international bloc opposed to Russia's invasion of Ukraine into a broader coalition to counter what it sees as a more serious long-term threat to global order from China. He also said that the U.S. does not support Taiwan independence. Now, last today, the premise of the World Economic Forum, held annually in Davos, Switzerland, is that if you bring powerful people together across borders, they can solve some of the world's thorniest problems. Well, if this year's forum is any indication, now the biggest geopolitical players can't even gather in the same room anymore, much less solve the problems. The world is splitting into opposing camps, and the globalist elite, as Davos attendees are often described, are not immune. At Davos's past, Russian oligarchs like Oleg Deripaska threw lavish parties. Vodka flowed at the Russia House, which is centrally located on the promenade. This year, Russian companies were banned from the forum. Deripaska sanctioned. And the Russia House was converted into the Russian War Crimes House. There was little Chinese participation this year, too, due partly to the owner's COVID restrictions on travel to and out of China. With two major autocratic powers absent, Davos, they say, felt like a transatlantic love fest, according to some attendees. Panel topics included European unity and the resurgence of the West. Russia's invasion of Ukraine dominated both of those discussions and most others around the forum. Samir Saran, president of Observer Research Foundation, a think tank based in Delhi, India, added, nothing binds you more than a common adversary. Lo and behold, you have that. You have this renaissance in the Atlantic Order, which was flailing in some sense. Former Finland Prime Minister Alexander Stubb pointed out, we've had this holiday from history for 30 years, right? And Davos has been very much a part of that. He was referring to the post-Cold War decades in Europe where walls came down and war seemed distant. Yet the annual collection of the world's elite and the idealism about power and globalization can feel like a relic of a time when supply chains were actually expanding, the connective force of the internet felt, well, boundless, and the U.S.-led liberal order stood preeminent. Stubb observed, the things that were supposed to bring us together are actually driving us apart at the moment because everything is being weaponized. So although Russia is out of the Davos Club, China, given its massive market and geopolitical weight, is still being cautiously courted. But if the world is again breaking down into blocks, many countries remain non-aligned. Like Bangladesh, India has called for an end to Putin's war without actually condemning Russia for launching it. Most of the world is simply not willing to line up with the West against Russia, let alone China. A luta continua, ladies and gentlemen. The struggle continues. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.